Morning, everyone. We're back. It's Thursday, and it's all about tourism today. And we had a really pretty good show last week. Matt, we were talking about the fire, as you mentioned, before we came on the air. And they are making progress, but I guess we got another one right now, too. So
in Sedona. Yeah. Since last week, it had just broken that there was 30. The Dragon Bravo fire was 29 or 30% contained. It's 44% contained now, but they still have over 1,000 people working on it.
Yeah, the folks that we talked to said it was going to be tough for it to completely be out. But
informative show last week. If you want to catch the podcast,
well,
it's at KBOI.com.
So. Yeah, and our hearts go out to everyone, all the firefighters and the residents that had to evacuate. And, of course, we lost some serious iconic structures. But the folks are giving it everything they got. Well, we're back, and we got a good show for you today. We're going to learn a little bit about culinary tourism, and we got the owner of Lucky Wishbone, our favorite chicken, right, Matt?
Clearly.
And he'll be on the air about 7:30, and then we're going to have Reed Park Zoo on, and they're going to talk about something a little bit different than just the animals, but what it takes to feed them, what it takes to open the door, what it takes to make sure their species survival plan is working, you know, with all the other zoos here in the United States and also the world. So it's going to be a little bit of a technical show, but I think you'll enjoy it because we all know what our favorite zoo is here in Tucson. Now, actually, we got two of them, but we're going to be talking to a gentleman that every day he thinks about how the community can support the Reed Park Zoo.
Jed's a good guy. I can't wait for it. I've spoken with him before, and he'll be on in the 8 o'clock hour, so
I'm
really looking forward to that.
He's got a lot of iron in the fires.
Yeah.
I told him he needs to come back and talk to Ted and me about some of the other stuff.
Okay.
But today he's going to talk about culinary tourism and the city of gastronomy. But before all of that takes place. Matt, you got the new intro done? Well, welcome, Tim Vimmerstadt, the co-host of The Morning Voice.
Good morning, Tom. And
you can talk over the music. That's okay.
Okay, well, I didn't want to be rude.
No. We figured we put this segment from amateur to professional with one of your favorite songs.
There we go.
Every Thursday, our co-host Tim Vimmerstadt, a longtime tourism manager with the Desert Museum in Old Tucson, scours the This Is Tucson and the Visit Tucson website to find out what is really going on this weekend. And Tim has got a great collection to talk about, including a brand new one that we didn't know about at Trail Dust Town. But so, Timmy, take it away.
My old stomping grounds.
Yes.
Well, we're going to start off with, once again, Chilling at the Chule, Tohono Chule. Check out live music, spirits, bites at Tohono Chule's summer series. It's on Saturdays and Fridays at Tohono Chule Park. They've partnered with the Children's Museum Oro Valley to provide family-friendly nature play. It's free to attend, but we recommend you bring a little bit of cash in your pocket for food and drinks. And then, of course, we're going to talk about Summer Safari Nights. Beat the heat and explore the outdoors with Reed Park Zoo's Summer Safari Nights, Friday and Saturday evenings, 6 to 8 p.m. at the Reed Park Zoo. And, of course, our guests will talk a little bit more about that. That's exciting. And let's see here. Sorry, I have to put my glasses on. And cool summer nights. Enjoy the sights of the Desert Museum at night. Cooler temperatures. Bring a flashlight so you can walk around. Spot a nocturnal animal. Touch a stingray. themed activities, 6 to 10 p.m. Saturdays through August 31st at the Arizona Sonora Desert Museum, 2021 North Kenny Road. And it's the final night of Saguaro Sunset at Old Tucson. So a free night at Old Tucson. You get to see local artists, eclectic array of arts, crafts, food vendors, summer evenings, strolling the historic Main Street. Support your local artists, live music, tasty food and drinks, and admission is free. So a great way to spend August 23rd. Going out to Old Tucson, cool off a little bit, and enjoy that fabulous park that you and I, Tom, know so well.
And so you can get in. You can get in there for free to that event. So you just said,
yes,
yeah. It's this is their last one. We might have mentioned it last week, but the one they had a couple weeks ago. 4,000 people in 3 hours.
That is amazing.
Absolutely. And we have been invited. The Attractions Alliance has been invited, Timmy, to the last one, and Matt. And we're going to be giving away free passports. Our Tucson Attractions passport goes through December 31st, but we have a few left over that we haven't sold. And, of course, a new one comes out in October. So we're going to be giving away, we're going to come up with something clever, but it's not going to be too hard to go home with a free Tucson Attractions Passport, which is the famous book of fun of savings to all the attractions here in our area. And this particular book we're giving away is valid through December 31st, so you'll be able to use it when your friends and your family come in for the holidays.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, you got one more, which is the brand new one.
Right, the Fairy Tale Tea Party at Trailless Town. So we invite everybody out to Trailless Town for a magical fairy tale tea party. You start your afternoon of family fun with delicious snacks and tea at the Savoy Opera House. Once again, one of my old stomping grounds. Interact with your favorite fairy tale characters, participate in interactive activities, and meet a real life unicorn.
We may have to put a disclaimer on that one, Tim.
I'm putting that on my newscast Monday morning.
You're gonna need to call Casey up there and find out what that's all about. But Matt, let's have a little reveal party here. Who is your favorite magical tea party character? Wasn't there a little rabbit that ran around with a clock or something? And he's on his way to a tea party.
You caught me flat-footed on that one, Tom.
Don't mention rabbit. I just finally got. I had a live wild rabbit run into my house when I was wheeling out the other day.
Okay,
finally got it out. So.
Well, maybe we can have somebody call in, Matt.
I'd say Thumper, but I think that's the wrong movie.
Yeah, anyway. No. Let's have somebody call in knows the fairy tale about the little rabbit that ran around and he was on his way to a tea party. And how do they do that? How do they do that, Matt? They call.
Oh, 790-2040. 790-2040.
I'm surrounded by that telephone.
It's okay.
It's all right. Yeah. So, well, thank you, Tim, for traveling down the road with Willie and all the other attractions. Now, what are those two websites that they can find out more about these events and festivals that are going on in August?
We encourage you to go to thisistucson.com and visittucson.org.
All righty. Thank you, Tim. And we have Matt. I'm going to surprise Matt a little bit.
You got to call her with the answer to your question.
All right, okay. Let's take that. We got a few minutes.
Okay, you ready?
Good morning. Yeah, this is the morning voice.
Good morning, Bunker.
Good morning, Bunker.
It's the Mad Hatter.
Yes, it is. Okay.
I'm late for a very important date. I'm late.
Of all people to call is Bunker.
That's right.
Well, you know, obviously we're a little deficient here in the fairy tales, apparently. But
Alice in Wonderland wasn't a Western, Bunker.
Actually, it took place on the west end of London.
Touche.
Well, Bunker, always good to hear from you, and thank you very much. And hey, when we go to break, send your address because I'm going to send you a passport. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Bunker. Well, we're going to be right back, and we're going to take the break just a little bit early after that. And we're going to be back with a special announcement, and Matt doesn't know about this.
Uh-oh.
But I'm going to try to play something, at least you can hear in the background when I make this announcement. I didn't get a chance to talk to Matt about this song. Maybe he can find it real quick if he has a moment. So we'll be right back. This is The Morning Voice on 10:30 a.m. KVOI. Well, happy birthday to my special granddaughter. She's got 7 years old. Her name is Nola Elizabeth Ryan, and we're so happy she's going into the second grade, I think next week. So have a great birthday, dear, and we hope to see you soon. All right, thank you, Matt. Happy birthday from Bugs Bunny, all the way from Warner Brothers Studio, was able to call in and give us his favorite happy birthday song. When I was at Six Flags, Warner Brothers was their characters. I actually came from Great America, Six Flags, and all the Six Flags and fell in love with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck and Yosemite Sam and all those other characters. And my daughter Sarah was at that age, and I got the assignment to create a Bugs Bunny birthday song for all of Six Flags. So we hired a studio, an offshoot of Warner Brothers, and for one day, I got a chance to listen to multiple musicians as we crafted a brand new birthday song for Bugs Bunny. And my daughter must have heard that song, 100 times in my career at Six Flags. So while that song is not licensed, unfortunately, to play anymore, we consulted with Warner Brothers, and we got a very special happy birthday song for Nola. So happy birthday, Nola. Thank you, Matt, and thank you, Tim, for, she's a really special girl. All righty, so we're back with The Morning Voice. Hey, if you can't, say something personal in your own talk show, come on now. we're back to The Morning Voice, and, today we're going to be talking about culinary tourism here in just a few moments. Josh from Lucky Wishbone and from the Sunland Foods is going to be calling in, and he's been very involved in the community and all kinds of things. And as a matter of fact, he probably has the best dialogue with the mayor and the county administrator over things not related to food, but certainly matters that do affect tourism. So, he asked me to do a little prep before he comes on, and if he happens to come on a little bit early, Matt, just give me the high sign, and we'll get to at least the introductions now. But I forgot one thing, Matt. So when we were at the old Tucson kickoff for Nightfall 33, we learned that Dr. Hyde's wife has been banished from the asylum. And a new character, Dabney the Clown, and I told Dabney about Nola's birthday party, and he gave me a special gift for her. And I'm going to turn around, Matt, and this is the special gift. Okay. For her. I remember there's this clown called Bozo that grew up in Chicago with me, Bob Bell. But every one of Dabney's friends is going to get a red nose if you're not near a TV or YouTube, you're going to see the announcer here with a big red nose
there
on.
There you go. You
know? So, Nola, this nose is a birthday gift from Dabney the Clown. He's in charge of the asylum now during Nightfall. I'm not sure fear is fun for you, but fear is fun for those that are probably maybe 13 and over. So, all right, enough of that. Let's get back to what the show's all about, and we'll put that in the mail to Nola. All right, so culinary tourism. You know, I think we start, probably the best thing to do is start just with a little bit of kind of a technical definition about what exactly is culinary tourism. And, of course, if you like to go out to the restaurants, Matt, and I know you like to go out to the restaurants, and Timmy as well. Timmy and I have had probably hundreds of meals together over the years. You always look for the newest and the best tasting and, of course, great customer service and unique. And so when you're a tourist and you're visiting a town, you don't want to go to the chains, even though the chain restaurants are good, because, you know, I have some really favorite chains. But you've tried to find out what is local. And I don't even know if you know this, Matt, but 2/3 of our restaurants here in Tucson are locally owned.
That is a big discriminator for Tucson. And people visit from out of town, I'm sure you hear it too, that marvel about that it's not all chain restaurants where they where they come from.
So we really are set apart. Of course, there have been, and there still is, some folks that started here. Certainly the Flores family started here, and many others. And they have gone off into Sam Fox, grew up in Tucson, and he's got restaurants now all over the United States. But one of the factors that sets us apart, absolutely, Matt, you know, so culinary tourism is simply is that your destination is known for its food. Now, there is this very technical word that 10 years ago, the city of Tucson didn't even know what it meant. And that was when we got certified by UNESCO, as that is United Nations Creative Cities, as the first city of gastronomy in the United States. Now, since then, San Antonio has joined the ranks. And I would imagine New Orleans is probably just around the corner, because I had an opportunity to work both in New Orleans and San Antonio. And let me tell you, when you have family and friends come in, excuse me, and you took them to one of your favorite restaurants. Now, I moved here in 1997 to be the GM of Old Tucson. And the first place that Helene Levy and Dana Pitt, the owners of Old Tucson, they took me to El Charro. And that was the one downtown, Matt. And between the great food and the mariachis, they got somewhat of an interview in. And I must have impressed them, or maybe I just chewed with my mouth closed. I don't know. But they hired me, and that started my career here in Tucson. And I haven't left. Well, I kind of left for about 6 months to help open an aquarium in Cincinnati. But I missed it so much, I came back without any problem. Now, some of the other things, you know, when you are a foodie, and is that a universal term, Matt, or is that just something that, you know, we created here?
Certainly something that has come into the parlance, as they say, over the last, I'd say, 10 to 15 years.
And you know how you recognize a foodie, Matt? It's someone that gets their food delivered to them at a restaurant and they take a picture of it.
that's a pretty good definition.
And it's kind of like, who can I share this with? And there are actually websites, social media sites, where you can put a picture of your food that was just delivered to you. And actually, I had a number two at Pima County that she definitely is a foodie and took pictures of everything we ate. And of course, when you're in the tourism business, you don't brown bag it. That's a no-no. And you always try to find out what the newest restaurant is in town. And the other thing you do is you attend food festivals if you're a foodie. And we have a few of those that go on here. You know, I thought it was always unique when you had the taste of X community. We probably have, I don't know, it's got to be Reed Park Zoo does a big, fundraiser, and it's the Taste of Tucson. You know, Desert Museum, Taste of Tucson. Tim, Taste of Tucson has been around for a long time, hasn't it?
It sure has been.
And, you know, so that is definitely a definition of a foodie, is those that attend food festivals. And, of course, Tucson, Meet Yourself, as we you call
There's
Tucson.
One that
Eat
came,
Yourself.
That's one that came to mind immediately. Yeah, sure. And that's a very long-running festival here.
Yeah, and it's changing a little bit. And we're going to bring someone in probably from the Southwest Center and to talk a little bit about some of the food festival. But we'll be back with Josh and Jacobson, who is the owner and of some of the Lucky Wishbones and other things. And we're going to talk more about the gastronomy, and we're going to talk about culinary tourism. We'll be right back. This is the Morning Voice, and we're talking about culinary tourism. And, you know, I have a good friend and a special guest on right now. And good morning, Josh.
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
Great. Thank you for joining us. I know you have a busy morning. I got to know Josh because his father is, the one of the owners of Sunland Foods. And obviously, Josh, you are the vice president. And I have to share with you, because, to our listening audience, obviously, we did a little bit of research on Sunland Foods. And Josh is also is the owner of two Lucky Wishbones here in town. And if you're obviously listening from our region, you know, Lucky Wishbone is our favorite chicken restaurant. There's a lot of them here in town, but our local chicken restaurants are Lucky Wishbone, and there's a number of them. And Josh, you got a chance to run two of these, I understand.
Yeah, so we've got, you know, just a great family business with Arizona Sunland Foods. My whole family's involved with that. And Arizona Sunland Foods is actually we're a proprietary manufacturing plant for restaurant chains. So a lot of what we do is right here in Tucson, making food items for local chains and distributors. Our product is generally private label, so you don't see our Sunland logo. But then on the Lucky Wishbone side, and this, you know, I appreciate you having me on, Tom, to talk about tourism, because one of the things that we are extremely proud about for Lucky Wishbone is that it was established in 1953 by Darrell Fulton, Clyde Buzzard, a guy named Donald Morris, and John Kinder. Those were the original owners. My family and I have been in it since 1996, and it's a generational business here in Tucson. We have generational customers as well, so we're just so blessed. And one of my favorite stories, and this is the tourism part, is that oftentimes we're fortunate to hear that, hey, when I come back to Tucson, my first two stops from the airport are Lucky Wishbone and EG's, or EG's and Lucky Wishbone. Like, generally, we are on that list for like the go-to when people come back, and also the folks that live here. So thank you for having me.
Well, that's a great list, and you'll really appreciate that, because, you know, now it's we don't have to go to the library to do a lot of research. We just go to our favorite AI site. And I thought this was pretty impressive, because we didn't know this when we asked Josh to be on. Josh Jacobson, Arnie is his father. I'm going to read this to you, Josh, and you really appreciate this. This is from Microsoft AI. If you're looking to highlight local producers in a culinary tourism or donor outreach piece, this company could be a great example of heritage-based entrepreneurship. Hey, that seems like that needs to be on a brochure.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously we have a lot of folks here involved in culinary tourism, and we've chefs that are James Beard winners. Janos, of course, from Downtown Kitchen always comes to mind, but we have some others as well from Barrio Bread and so on. And here you are right here, smack. Unsolicited, Mr. AI from Microsoft is saying, I picked the right guy to talk to today.
Well, you know, I don't know if we can necessarily claim to be in like the same boat as some of the amazing chefs that we have here, especially since we are the city of gastronomy, but we do fill a need. We've got our unique niche of, items that Tucsonans have, you know, really supported over the years. And again, we're so blessed. But, you know, I mean, I think as far as Tucson goes, though, you know, tourism is one of the biggest industries for Tucson. I don't have to let your listeners know about it. But, you know, I always think about how proud we are just to be involved in our own small way in the restaurant industry here in Tucson, and where there's only nine cities in the United States that are UNESCO cities. And here we are, we're in one of them.
Yeah, so those are UNESCO creative cities, amazing list of categories. Mm-hmm. I give you an example, art and, you know, in Santa Fe, it makes a lot of sense. But there's only two now, city of gastronomy, towns, and we were the first 10 years ago. So in a sense, that's what came to mind when I was thinking about what to talk about today, and I was reminded that we were certified 10 years ago by UNESCO as the first city. And we have some, you know, pretty good company here with the city of gastronomy. It's a global family as well. Mm-hmm. And they have a tendency to pick not the top tier cities. So you won't see probably San Francisco on this list, even though there are a lot of people think there's a lot of great food in San Francisco. So you kind of see like the second tier cities that have been involved in this certification. Now, so 10 years ago, you know, we were chosen for lots of reasons, you know, a lot of it has to do with our heritage here and what makes us really unique because of the certification was we have ancient foodways from the Toto Autumn Nation and other indigenous mm-hmm. communities. That's one. Mexican and Spanish influences, so that makes the top two list. And Sonoran desert ingredients. So, Matt, can you name one of those Sonoran desert ingredients? This is not a test.
Mesquite flour.
There we go. Absolutely. That was the number one. And the prickly pear.
There you go.
All kinds of prickly pear stuff, from syrups to jellies. And what's happened, and I know, Josh, you're known for, you know, being creative in the foods that you you're offering to your clients, utilizing a lot of these natural ingredients that were only found and still are only found in this area. You know, that was a big deal when the application was sent over to the United Nations and UNESCO people, and we didn't get it the first year we put an application in. But Jonathan Mabry, who was the author of this wonderful application, who's now the executive director of the nonprofit that actually is in charge of, you know, telling the story about the city of gastronomy. We added something new, the Resilience Kitchen, Josh, and this cooking classes, oral history, storytelling. And it supports our farmers and refugee entrepreneurs and local food producers. So I would say you're probably one of those local food producers here in town.
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely fit into that. And because we're working with, unfortunately, I can't tell you exactly who our customers are because it is proprietary.
Absolutely.
But we do. We do. We do business with different salsas and sauces that are local to here. We have a couple of accounts where we certainly are using those local ingredients that are the flair to what the customers and the clientele want. And you know, the reason I brought up the Creative City is because Tucson, our chefs here, I think they just exemplify creativity and Southwestern cuisine. And when you think about places like Teresa's Mosaic Cafe or other types of Mexican food restaurants or just local flair, there's no shortage to creativity. We see that with Gary Hickey and the Charro concepts. El Taco Rustico is one of those great places that I always think about, because these chefs, they just get to shine and put their own mark on things. Travis over at the Parish is another great example of that as well. We have a great food scene here. A lot of foodies come here to tour and to check it out. So it's amazing.
Yeah, and one of the programs features a lot of these chefs that you talked about. They get to go out and to the world and represent Tucson. So we have a visiting kind of chef program. They have to go through a little bit of a workshop with Janos and Jonathan, and then we send them out to the world for all these other gastronomy festivals. So and we're actually going to have a special event coming up soon that we'll talk about a little bit later on, but where it's going to feature these chefs and the food that they made during these international festivals, that a lot of times what's a Sonoran dog? I mean, if you live in Tucson, you know what it is. But if you're in Italy, you probably don't know what a Sonoran dog is. My guess is they really enjoyed that. We're going to have to ask you to hang on for a very short segment coming up, Josh. And don't go anywhere. And this is The Morning Voice, and we're on KVY 1030. We'll be right back in just a few moments with Josh Jacobson from Sunland Foods and Lucky Wishbone. Well, we're back with Josh Jacobson. He is the vice president of Sunland Foods, as well as the owner of two locally owned Wishbone restaurants.
Lucky Wishbone, of course, the iconic.
Yeah. Tucson's favorite chicken. Ah, for absolutely. And the billboards are still out there, And Josh, I have to say, again, I'm just amazed by all this AI stuff that's going on. But in my last night after we talked, I wanted to do a little bit of research. And I have to just share again with the listening audience, because I'm so thankful that you came on. And you are part of the culinary experience here. But we have a whole community that's endorsed us being the city of gastronomy. Over 50 restaurants have received the certification of being official. I was lucky enough to be on that committee. And, it's just not serving local food and using the local food ingredients, but it's also customer service. It's support the community. There's all kinds of things that go on. And I think you are a great example, according to Mr. AI, and I know personally Mr. AI is accurate on every one of those. So we got just a few minutes, but I want to share these real, Josh. We got the camera on you, so I know you're going to turn red, but that's okay, because you deserve this, okay? But one of the things about City Gastronomy is that we encourage people to source from local producers, and I know that's a big, big emphasis on what you do there, developing really brand new food products and some of the staple items as well. You do partner with local the Arizona Food Service Network, but again, so you get a chance to really help out the entire state in kind and product donations. Now they say in here it's not known very well, but I'm going to break the news here. Okay, you support school fundraisers and events and local charities and food pantries. And Josh, if it's secret, it's not secret anymore.
At least, well, you're not wrong at all, Tom.
At least 10 people heard that this morning, Josh. So you're in good shape there, okay?
Hey, that's the 10 right people.
And they have a lot of friends. Community festival celebrating Sonoran culinary heritage. There we go. You know, and we just had that wonderful it's an annual thing, the Corn Festival, the Maize Festival, that Tucson City of Gastronomy. I never knew so many things can be made out of corn, Josh, and I found that out going to the Maize Festival. So, and workforce development, we need qualified, you know, workforce here, and you guys are doing a wonderful job helping supporting Pima Community College. And that culinary and food science programs with Pablo and the new chancellor is just going strong. And I'm really happy to see this, Josh, that you're supporting that. Really, it's an old initiative, but renewed initiative.
Yeah, and so Pima Community College is doing great stuff. And then there's also a lot of other organizations in the community like Gap Ministries, Gospel Rescue Mission, that also have workforce development for this area. They're gearing people up to go into the restaurant industry, which we always need great people to come and work with us. And oftentimes it's said that the restaurant industry is, you know, the industry of first starts and new starts and 33rd starts, right? You know, because we hire people from across the spectrum. And, you know, getting back to the philanthropic aspect, you know, you're absolutely right, Tom. We do donate a lot of, if we have excess protein or any sort of excess item that can be donated to food pantries, we do that. We also do a lot of stuff with the schools. We donate gift cards religiously to any sort of sports activity. And that's not just local to what, you know, that's not just Lucky Wishbone doing that. I'm saying that, you know, industry wide, when people need something for an auction or a community event, you know, the first thing that they think about, and I do this as well, is who do I know in the restaurant industry that could help me out with this? And it's just, I think it's a testament to all the operators in this community that know that our customers support us, and we always want to give back. I think that, you know, there's just, as we were talking about yesterday, there's a great camaraderie in the restaurant industry to make sure that we are good ambassadors for Tucson, knowing that tourism is one of our biggest industries.
Yeah, I mentioned as we talked yesterday. Clearly, I have lived in San Antonio and New Orleans and Houston and maybe a few more cities that I can't remember now. And this is probably the most collaborative group of chefs and restaurants, competitive restaurants, to help put Tucson on the map. And I have to say, I looked at this up. And the bestplaces.net. And now they review the entire United States and the world. And if you take a look at this, bestplaces.net, I'm not going to list them all here, you know, but, you know, to have ranked 15 in the entire world of best sense of place. Now, sense of place means everything, okay? You know, whether it be weather, whether it be your parks, your quality of life, all kinds of things. So go to that. We want to really thank Josh from coming on. This is just a small little story about culinary tourism, but certainly Sunland Foods and Lucky Wishbone are a big, big part of that, Josh. And we want to thank you so much for coming on the air with us here at The Morning Voice.
Thanks, Tom. Have a great morning. See you soon.
All right. Take care. And make sure you go to Lucky Wishbone for lunch today. We'll be right back. Well, good morning again for our second hour here on The Morning Voice, brought to you by KVOI and Dr. Ackerley, who is our producer and our confidant. He's on Fridays, actually, talking about the U of A. And he'll be here tomorrow at the same seat that I'm sitting in right now. We're also on Facebook, and we're on YouTube. You know, 10:30 The Voice. Just look us
Correct.
Up. And we're enjoying the multiple cameras that are on here, and we actually added all these lights in here too, so there's no way I can fall asleep with you in this morning. We got a great guest waiting to be on the show, and he is from the most attended, other than maybe a national or local park attraction here in Tucson, Arizona, and we're so proud of that. I'm so proud of the Reed Park Zoo. My kids, when they were growing up, we had an annual pass, and so we were there probably four times a month, depending on what new animal or what babies. And that's always a good sign of a zoo when they have a lot of babies. That means the natural habitats are, you know, is similar and close to where these animals are found in the wild. And our guest this morning is Jed Dobbs. Good morning.
Morning, Tom. How are we doing?
Great. So thank for you for being on. I know you had some duties this morning, but we wanted this particular hour, we're talking about nonprofits and how important fundraising is for you're a 501c3 organization, and you support the community in many, many different ways. But you know what's really important is that you know the person behind the ask, and that's why we asked Jed to come on this morning, because there's probably no better person, other than maybe the two bosses that he has, that know more about what's going on at Reed Park Zoo, and you too can support this program. So again, we're glad you're here. We know you were dropping off the kids, and we're celebrating my granddaughter's 7-year-old birthday today. So it's a great day to have you on and to talk about Reed Park Zoo, because where she lives, one of the greatest zoos is the San Antonio Zoo, and whenever we go back to that area, we love the San Diego Zoo and the Wild Animal Park, but we love the San Antonio Zoo when we're visiting. But when we're not visiting, we send our guests over to Reed Park Zoo. So fundraising comes in all different kinds of things that you do there. Let's start off with, first of all, why is fundraising important to Reed Park Zoo?
Yeah, thanks, Tom, and happy birthday to your granddaughter.
Thank you.
I have not been to the San Antonio Zoo, but I've heard great things about it. I think maybe before I kind of answer the fundraising, I think that a little history on myself. I'm a born and raised Tucsonan, so I grew up here going to our zoo, and I've now worked at our zoo for 20 years. I started as a college intern my senior year at U of A, and then got hired on as a zookeeper, and then became an educator in charge of events for a little bit. And so I've worn many hats, and I think that gives me a very unique inside look at the whole operation of the zoo. And then when we're talking about donors and development, it is a great way to be able to connect to those donors. That's obviously what we're trying to do at the zoo. And I think a lot of people may not realize that Reed Park Zoo is a nonprofit. Most AZA accredited zoos, meaning accredited by the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, that accreditation is giving those institutions the highest grade of taking care of wild animals. And in doing so, we are a nonprofit. So that means that all of our money raised stays and goes directly to the zoo and supporting conservation that we do all over the world. That, of course, means that it does take quite a bit of money to run a zoo. You know, elephants are expensive when they're eating a lot of food. And, you know, the way we help to support that is, of course, our gate entry, our amazing events and rentals that we do at the zoo, and then through the community. And I'll tell you, Tucson community comes out big and is a huge supporter of what we do. And without them, we really would not have the world-class zoo that we do. So for anybody that's listening that has supported the zoo or come to one of our events, a huge thank you to all of you for making Reed Park Zoo what it is.
Yeah, and you're currently undergoing a lot of construction that's going on, and that's because you have this new master plan. And without the community, your zoo wouldn't be transforming into all these new exhibits.
Yeah, that's correct. We're undergoing our Pathways to Asia. It's about a 6.5-acre expansion, taking over where our old parking lot was and then expanding the zoo to the front. That's going to bring our tiger species back. We have a beautiful reptile house or a tropical kingdom that's going to have Komodo dragons, large pythons, big bats, different reptiles and amphibians from the Asiatic continent. We've got Asian small-clawed otters, red pandas. We'll be the only zoo in Arizona with red pandas. So a lot of really fun and exciting stuff. And Tom, you're right that a project like this doesn't happen without the support of the community. Fundraising is a huge way that we're able to support and add on to our existing zoo. But a big portion of that too is, again, a thank you to our community for passing the tax initiative in 2017. That tax initiative in 2017 gave a tenth of a penny. So for every, I think it's $10, it's a penny that goes directly to the zoo. And I was able to raise and almost double our budget. That does sunset in 10 years. So coming up in 2026 here, we're going to be going back out to the voters and hopefully asking them to continue that for another 10 years. And it's important that we're being good stewards of that money. We want to show what we have done. Over the last 10 years, we've made huge additions. Our beautiful world of play for our kids, our play area. We've got our new flamingo habitat. We've brought a sloth in. And now, of course, working on Pathways to Asia. But that's only a part of it. Again, there's the whole pizza pie, and we've got the different slices, and our donors make up a big part of that. And, you know, it's important when we have our donors to be able to connect with them. They, of course, are passionate about whatever their mission is. And if they're coming to the zoo, of course, it's going to be animal advocacy. And so it's really important that we keep them in the loop of what's going on. Messaging is critical, making sure they know the ins and outs, being transparent on what's going on, and then bringing them out to see the project. I mean, it's really important. It's everyone likes to see the fun stuff that's going on. So one of my jobs is doing a lot of behind-the-scenes tours.
Yeah, you know, so I remember when I first met Nancy, your president and CEO, she took us on a tour, and you had just opened up your new animal care facility as well as your brand-new kitchen. And a lot of people don't understand that you have to take care of the animals. You have to have professional veterinarians and of exotic animals. And you got to every animal that you have there has a special diet and is prepared right there at the zoo.
Yeah, every day it's a pretty tall order. We've got around 600 animals, and every animal has their specific diets that's made up by our zoo nutritionists, our chief veterinarians, and our animal care specialists to ensure that those animals are getting the proper diet, proper nutrition. And it's also important to change that up seasonally. You know, we all don't want to eat the same cereal every day for the rest of our life. And so seasonally, we are going to change that up. So for the grizzly bear, maybe we're getting a salmon one day and a trout another day, or maybe, I mean, they're omnivores, so maybe they're getting watermelon during our summertime and pumpkin during fall. And then the other thing that's important, too, is providing what we call enrichments. And enrichment is just changing up the day-to-day life of the animals. Every day is something new and fun and exciting. in the wild, animals do have to work for their food. Whether a predator or a prey, they have to search for their food. They have to hunt for their food. And so we don't just take a big pile of food and dump it in the middle of the habitat. We're going to ask them to have some cranial exercises and use their brain to be able to use puzzle feeders or hide that food, or putting that food up high if it's an aerial predator or an arboreal predator, and asking them to work a little bit for their food, just like what we would have to do for us and animals have to do in the wild. We want that. And what we see by doing that is having very well balanced, not only physically, but mentally stable animals.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of different ways you can donate and support the zoo. And we're going to talk about those, Jed, when we come back from the break. So stand by. Don't go anywhere. Be careful while you're driving. This is the Morning Voice, and we're on the air with Jed, and he's, 20-plus history at Reed Park Zoo. Lots and lots of information. This is the Morning Voice, and this is 1030 KVUI.com, and I have a frog in my voice, so we'll see you back here in just a few minutes. Well, I know where I'm going after this show, Matt. I'm going to the zoo. Hey, good morning. We're back, and we have a special guest, Jed. And Jed has been a 20-year veteran of the Reed Park Zoo, and now he gets a chance to tell people what's going on at the zoo. Now, we have a couple people on the call, and we're going to bring them back, and we're going to bring them on in just a few minutes, so hang in there, Vince, and we'll be right back with you. But, Timmy, are you there?
Yes, sir.
All right, Tim, listen, you were talking about a special event at the Reed Park Zoo. Can you share that with Jed? And then maybe he can give you a little bit more about what's going on there.
Yeah. Let me wheel into that room.
So,
wheelchair.
Yeah, are you okay with talking about your favorite event that's going on at Reed Park Zoo?
Absolutely. And Mr. Dobbs, as a former, that's a retired zoo employee of the Desert Museum, good to have you on board.
Okay,
Tim. Good to hear from you.
There you go. Make sure you guys can both hear each other because we're on two different phone lines here. What was that?
Yep.
What was that favorite event that you were talking about, Tim, in a few minutes ago?
Summer Safari Nights. Beat the heat, explore the outdoors in the Reed Park Zoo. There's summer safari nights on Friday and Saturday evening, so tomorrow night, 6 to 8 p.m. Fantastic way to explore the zoo. As Mr. Dobbs knows, animals in the Sonoran Desert are more active in the evening. Just a great way to find out what your local zoo has to offer.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. Our summer safari night, I hate to tell you this, but it just wrapped up this last weekend. So last weekend was the end of our summer safari nights, but every summer we do have those summer safari nights, and you're right. As our summer heat is bearing down, animals seek shade and shelter. And so the evening time is usually a great time to be able to come out and start seeing those animals moving around. It was a great summer event this season, and a lot of local bands were out, so we had a different band every night. Hopefully you had a chance. Did you get a chance to come out and see us this summer?
I did not. I am wheelchair bound, and I can't drive anymore. And so I didn't get a chance to come out and explore it. But I've been out there before. Your old education director, Vivian Van Peenen, was a dear friend of mine.
Gotcha.
She would often have me out. And you stole Sue Tygalski from us at the Desert Museum.
Yes.
Yeah, Sue's actually now in running a zoo in East Texas.
Is she really?
She is, yeah. So she left a couple years ago. Great opportunity. Running a zoo out in East Texas, doing a great job, doing amazing work out there. We miss her. And, yep, Vivian was a staple at the zoo as well. So Vivian was our education curator for several years. So, so it's been quite the road. 20 years, I've seen quite a bit at the zoo. Just so you know, Tim, even if you can't make it out to the zoo, we do have our web cameras that are live on our website. So from the comfort of your home, you can always tune in to see some of your favorite animals.
Well, that's awesome to know. Thank you. And I remember when you started that program, I was jealous at the Desert Museum, and we just didn't have the technology or whatever to implement such a program. I believe they do now, but I can't believe we haven't met after 20 years at the zoo.
I'm sure we probably ran into each other at some point there. It sounds like you've got quite a good knowledge base. And of course, Desert Museum is one of our favorites also. So it's great having two accredited facilities here in Tucson for the community to be able to enjoy and learn about our wild animals around the world and our local species here in the Sonoran Desert.
Well, I got a chance that you guys had a chance to chat a little bit. One of the things we're known for at the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance, that there's nothing about being a competitor when you're a member of a marketing organization that both have the same goal, which is to share their attraction with the local folks here in town and also the tourists that are in town. We just got a few minutes, Jed. I wanted to ask you a couple more questions before we go into our break. And funding priorities, can you give us a little example of why it's so important that the community reach out to you and support your programs?
Yeah, I mean, the reason that we have a world-class zoo is because of the fundraising that we do. Again, taking care of animals it costs money. Doing research, doing conservation, it does require those resources. And without the support of the community, our zoo would look very different. And, you think about some of the big cities, San Diego, Bronx, that of course they've got big corporations there that are supporting those institutions. Ours is really grassroots. I mean, Tucson is that community that does feel very grassroots, that is all in to make this the best community that it is. And that fundraising is so important for continuing the mission of what we do, which is saving wild animals and wild places. That is done by bringing, over 600,000 guests into the zoo every year. And by doing that, we not only can connect people with the animals that we have, but we also are globally protecting animals around the world. I can get into a little bit more about our conservation efforts and what that looks like later, but it is a mission-based project that we're doing. It also allows us to give all school field trips free access to the zoo. So people may not know that if you have a child, a student, and they're coming to the zoo on a school field trip, that field trip is free. And that's really important for us to connect our youngsters to what we're doing. It's a great opportunity for them to learn. And all that fundraising helps us to, again, support the community.
That's fantastic. And I want to share with you, and it's well known, of course, you can go to your website. What is your website?
ReedParkZoo.org. So as an organization, ReedParkZoo.org.
Very simple, and you can learn a lot more about the ways you can assist Reed Park. But my favorite event because I'm a Halloween freak, is Boo at the Zoo. And it,
coming up.
When my kids were little, we just loved Boo at the Zoo. And it's important to mention that because that's coming up in just, before you know it. I mean, it's more Halloween's more about Nightfall, even though Nightfall's a great event. But if you have small children, Reed Park Zoo is the place to go for sure. And those proceeds, again, as Dad was telling us, are help everything from animal wellness to education, exhibit develop, and global local conservation. Jeb, I'm gonna thank you very much and let you get back to your life in the zoo, and very important Reed Park Zoo, and we learn more about how to help you and help the zoo. So thank you, Jed, and thank you all the folks that work at the zoo for having you here in our community and being on air at This Is the Morning Voice. Thank you again, Jed.
We're going to be. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, sir. Thank you. We're going to be right back with Vince Trinidad and talk a little bit about sports tourism. Well, we're back, and I'm Tom Moten, your host for The Morning Voice. And we've been talking about culinary tourism, and we've been talking about really how to support our attractions here, especially the 501c3s, which is a majority of the attractions here in our community. And now we want to talk a little bit about sports tourism. And I just attended a chamber function, I think it was last night or the night before. And the speaker that was very involved with some of the sports here, the Arizona Bowl, for instance, declared that Tucson is a sports city. And Vince Trinidad, our guest who's on the phone, I think, Vince, you should be proud of that, because part of it all started with you sports and your support back a few years ago when you were designated or hired to be the first person in charge of sports in the city of Tucson.
Well, thank you, Tom. I greatly appreciate that. One of the nice things about sports is that it's been happening in some way, shape, or form for decades, for years. Historically speaking, there are instances where, those civilizations attended sporting events in some way, shape, or form. Generally, just within their respective city areas. But, really in the 20th century, we started seeing a lot more people traveling as transportation systems got better, the experiences at, sporting destinations got better. People wanted to go. But really, the biggest change that happened was, you and I and others and Tim, if we had somebody that we knew, generally like a son or daughter, grandson, granddaughter, cousin, niece or nephew that was traveling for a quote unquote championship or a regional or something like that, that really spurred a lot of the travel. We're all of a sudden we're picking up and we're packing up the SUV and we're heading to some destination to watch them play.
Well, I want to thank you, Tim, for asking Vince to come on today, because we had 30 minutes to talk about something special, and this is really a special topic, Tim, and thank you, Tim. And I know you're good friends with Vince, and you used to play a little bit of sports in your time as well.
Yeah, he's one of my dearest friends.
Tim, the U of A sports, of course, you when you came into town, that was probably the most predominant sports.
When I came into town, or Vince?
No, when you moved here to Tucson, the U of A was the predominant sports.
That and the Tucson Toros.
Yes. Okay. And Vince, you'd be happy to know that last night they also declared that baseball is back. And I don't know if you heard about this, but Mike Fader, as you know from the Tucson Toros and the Tucson Sidewinders, and I guess the Padre team here for a couple of years, started a Mexican baseball fiesta, in a sense, a spring training for the Mexican Winter League, which plays opposite. A lot of major league players also after their season play in Mexico. And he started a baseball festival, and I believe it's been going on for 13, 14 years. And one of the one of those teams decided that they're going to house the team here in Tucson. So beginning in October, we are going to have, or Tucson's going to have, a professional baseball team associated with the Mexican Winter League. And that's a pretty big deal, don't you think, Vince?
Absolutely. Oh, my gosh. I think that, you know, I was lucky enough to be in Tucson at the time when, you know, those conversations were happening. And, you know, and Mike Fader has been certainly a great ambassador for baseball for Tucson for many, many years, and certainly enjoyed, you know, going to a lot of the baseball programs that he's been able to put on. But, you know, you take that aspect of that passion for baseball and for Tucson in general, and that was matched up with Felipe Garcia, who is now the president of Visit Tucson, and the groups that he knew in his work doing tourism, you know, for Mexico and drawing those visitors in the town. And I'll never forget the conversation. He's like, he asked the question, have you ever seen baseball in Mexico? And I said, no. And having grown up playing baseball myself, you know, Little League and whatnot, you know, that was the impression that I had. It was a completely different ball game. No pun intended, you know, because the excitement, the music, the food, you know, everything. And that was truly amazing. So to be able to bring that passion and that uniqueness of that baseball culture to Tucson, which has a large Latino population, absolutely. I mean, it's the best place for it.
Yeah, so I don't know if you got a chance to meet Victor Cuevas Sr., but his team, he has a team in the Mexican Pacific League franchise, as I'm calling the Winter League. And he decided, with a lot of work, I guess, from your successors out there, as well as Felipe Garcia and Mike Fader, and we have a brand new Southern Arizona Sports and Tourism Authority. It morphed from Pima County Sports and Tourism Authority to the Southern Arizona, and Blake Eager, former baseball player, is the executive director over there, and he has been working hard. Keno Sports Complex put in millions of dollars of renovation to the baseball stadium, including a new surface, grass, new grass. After 20 plus years of the same grass growing every year, it was time to change it. And we got really lucky to get some of the World Baseball Classic. As you remember, I think you were here when the Word Baseball Classic started. We got the Mexican national team for their training and exhibition games. So you're absolutely right. The Mexican flag was everywhere. The families were everywhere. They were hooping and hollering and having a – it reminds me of when I went to a baseball game in St. Louis Cardinals back in the 50s with my grandfather, who knew Stan Musial, and we watched him play first base. We were on the first base line. And the people were just – I got to have his autograph. And it was just, you know, amazing. And now sometimes you got to, like, ask the folks, you know, can you do a little bit extra? We love to see you play baseball. With the Mexican leagues, they're in the fans. They're just having a great time with the folks that are coming. And I have to say, we were pretty amazed when the Mexican national team trained here in Tucson at Keno Sports Complex. Now, your former boss, Rick Vaughn, who's a good friend of ours, was always on the ball for youth and amateur sports. And I know that was a big, big push for you when you helped him start the sports tourism program. Do you have a favorite memory about your time here?
Oh, gosh, we could probably spend all day long. Not that anyone would want to listen to all the stories. You know, I think that the biggest thing, you know, is that, as I mentioned before, there's always been a huge passion for sports. And really, you know, Rick was instrumental in one understanding that markets change and evolve, And the beautiful part about sports tourism is that it's pretty recession resistant. So you had in 08, we had obviously the dip that happened when, you know, normal group travel, convention travel, you know, bottomed out. Sports during that particular point, during that particular time, had at least a 1% gain when everything was tanking, you know, going into double digits down the other side. So really visionary, you know, on that part for Rick to sit there and say, how do we start, you know, and this is in 2005, how do we start a sports program to work with the venues that Tucson has and advocate for more access to those particular things and bringing those national championships using the convention center? Obviously it's indoor, outdoor. So whatever Tucson has in general, and then you start having that conversation, a lot of advocation, you know, with obviously the city and the county, looking at the county's facilities, which is a great, great outdoor grass area. And it's expanded, you know, greatly since I started back in 2005, you know, to the time I left Tucson in 2013, there's a lot of investment that happened. But, you know, Rick was super passionate about bringing those events into town. And, you know, we did numerous events in the area, BMX, fencing, volleyball, soccer events, a lot of great soccer happening, you know, already with Fort Lowell, the Tucson Invitational Games with collegiate baseball and softball. Those were all great memories for me. I think probably the best one is not really one particular one, was I would go to these events and I would try to sit in the stands or just sit and observe. And you see all the smiling faces of people. For the most part, people are happy. They're not happy if their team loses, but at the same point though, you know, for the most part, they're saying, you know what? Our team didn't win. But that's the question. How did they do? Oh, they didn't win. But we're going to go to the Desert Museum, or we're going to go to Old Tucson. We're going to go tour U of A in some way, shape, or form. We want to see this particular thing. And that is the positive impact of sports tourism for any community. And it's just great to be able to be a small part of that. And, you know, Blake is and rest of Visit Tucson are doing a great job, you know, taking that to the next level and finding that key identity for Tucson in terms of sports.
Vince, can you hang on just for a few moments, because we have one segment left and I kind of like to wrap up and ask you a couple questions?
Absolutely.
All right. This is The Morning Voice, and I'm your host, Tom Moulton, and we're on the phone with Vince Trinidad, who was the first manager that led the way when Visit Tucson, our destination marketing organization, formed a sports tourism department. We'll be right back. Well, we're back, and we're talking to Vince Trinidad. Tim, you good friends with Vince. What are some happy memories you've had with Vince in the sports area?
Well, Vince filled the TCC with dirt and put on a BMX event. And he and I decided to borrow a couple of bikes from kids and race around the track. And I was a chubby guy at the time, and Vince beat me. And unfortunately, Channel 4, KVOA, caught it on video. And so when I got home that day, my ex-wife, Mary, said, "Hey, rough day at the office."
Yeah. Well, I don't think I would have even made the first jump. So maybe taking dirt out of all kinds of crevices if I did that.
That would be terrible.
Well, Vince, I, you know, 2005 to 2013 were great times. I mean, obviously, you right off the bat had a youth football program come in, and I worked with you a little bit in helping to find fields, and mm-hmm. I think that's where the community collaboration really began, because you know, first of all, we you know, certainly Visit Tucson supported the sports, but didn't have a sports program, and then all of a sudden we had this wonderful youth football come, and we had no stadiums or no, you know, places to have them play, because there was always strong competition amongst anything that really goes on in a football stadium, and you besides recognizing all the stadiums and the assets that we had, your support and your ability to get out and get to know the community, I think just set the trend for all of us to work together, because obviously sports is so much more than it was than 2004. Even though, as you mentioned, we did have spring training, we did have minor league baseball, and we had Jim Tegas. You remember Jim Tegas?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think he passed away, and his son has taken over. And and those were the early days of fast pitch softball tournaments coming into Tucson, and you had to get that all squared away and organized, and then you brought baseball here from Jim Tegas, and meanwhile the Pima County Sports and Tourism Authority under Rick Vaughn was saying do more youth sports, and I can hear him having that conversation with you, and clearly you must have delivered, because you were here until 2013. So we really thank you. And what, you know, that was a happy memory, Tim. I really, that was a great story. So I think he did one up on you. Do you have another one that you can remember with Tim?
You know what? I'm glad that Tim remembered that story that way, because I think I was the chubby one at the time, and Tim looked looked very, very svelte and very sleek in this and that. And I'm pretty sure I lost the race on that one. So thank you for being gracious and magnanimous on that one there, Tim. But, you know, like anything, you know, it's there's a lot of great things that happen in any community, and you meet a lot of individuals that really help you drive the conversation. And, you know, you really need advocates. And, you know, Tom, you've been an advocate for a long time. Tim has been an advocate for a long time. There's bringing the events to a destination is only one part of doing that. And obviously it takes time and effort and money to be able to recruit and do those types of things. But the staying power is, I distinctly remember saying, you know, Rick was saying to me, he's like, if you can get them to stay a day before or a day after their sporting event, then that's the incremental change that we need. That's really, because sports at that point, you know, how do you go ahead and get bigger and better? You get them to stay an extra day. And you get them to stay an extra day because of the things that they can do in a destination. And if they don't have those things, or we don't articulate or advocate for those things that they can do, they're not going to stay. And you have to do that in a way, you know, most sporting groups, you know, believe it or not, they know a year in advance where they're going. And some of them actually book their hotels a year in advance. But you know, you have to get in front of them and advocate for your destination to say, this is why you need to stay an extra day. And in some cases, you know, it actually comes at the right time. For BMX as an example, a lot of these families travel for BMX. And we did BMX within the convention center, the arena there. With all that dirt.
Hey, Vince, we're about running out of time. How do we get hold of you? Because I know you're out there helping communities, and you're available to do that. Can you tell us how to get hold of you?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm on LinkedIn. I think that's probably the best way to go ahead and reach out to me. But believe it or not, I still have a Tucson number. Feel free to go ahead and text me, 520-609-2622. I would love to see if I can help you with any type of sports tourism.
Vince and Tim, thank you so much for having both of you on the air to talk about sports. We got a lot of stuff going on with the Mosaic Quarter and the new baseball, Mexican baseball, coming into town this October. I want to thank all of our guests for coming on today. And this is a Tucson Voice, and I'm Tom Moulton, and we'll be back next Thursday.